Earthlings, Americans, Canadians, Europeans, Asians, Central Asians, South Americans, Africans. We're all here for you.
Everywhere you want to be. Everywhere.
I have not... No nationality will be unturned. Welcome to This Week in Mormons, everyone. We appreciate you taking the time to be with us during this little bit when we will talk about Mormon nonsense and news and such. You can, of course, visit us at thisweekinmormons.com, which we encourage you to do, where you can listen to our podcasts, leave us comments, all those things. And if you want to be more private about it, you can send us an email at contact@thisweekinmormons.com.
Yeah, well, I like that we're leading with that. I mean, I feel like a lot of times people are like, Al, Jeff, how do I get in contact with you? I'm listening to the podcast that I found I don't know where, but now what do I do? And we're never able to tell them.
Yeah, well, I put this at the beginning because, you know, a lot of people might just taper off. You know, they say, oh, okay. They know the show's ending, and then they just don't listen to the last minute. And then they might never learn how.
That is so true.
How to love us. So that's what I was thinking. So anyway, we're glad you're all here, everybody. Hopefully we'll have a grand time this week. We loved having Tanner Christensen on last week. We hope you all enjoyed that. That was fun.
That was a lot more fun, and our internet was working better. I mean... I feel like if this show ever had functioning, like, speedy internet for us to talk to each other on, we wouldn't even know what to do. Even when we're face-to-face with each other, we still have enough lag that it makes things frustrating. And I just feel like that's part of who we are and what we're about.
Well, I think the hold up here is you, though, Al, because you see, you spend all of your time now in the fine and exciting world of Missouri.
Uh-huh.
And you guys have had bad internet problems there for a while.
So. You should have talked to me yesterday. I was down in the Casey Startup Village working on Google Fiber. That was tremendous.
Really? Real nice. How was that? Was it amazing? Was it like taking a test drive in a Tesla?
No. I mean, ESPN.com loads real good on fiber. Real, real good. I don't have any needs for, like, honestly, I could care less about the speed except for when I'm on a phone call with people. When I'm on a call with people, I want the fastest internet available. Any other time, I'm happy. I'm happy with my little 10 meg up and down. Like, I don't need more than that.
Well, you know what I love, you know, for those who have Verizon Fios available to them, that awesome new ad campaign they have going on called, how they explain it. They do a play on words because, you know, the whole thing is a lot of people get good speeds down even now, but your uploads might not be great. Right. And so they call it half fast internet and how they're here to do away with that. But when you say half fast quickly, what does it really sound like?
Oh, I see what you did.
And
there.
I think it's pretty funny. I mean, let's be honest here. It's pretty funny. Good for them.
Okay. Well, whatever. So anyway, people, this week in Mormons, this is a show. Jeff and myself, we do a little ditty. We're here for you. That's what we're about. We're not so much on the, about the internet or being clever, borderline witty, which that just comes naturally. That's instinct and it just happens. And that's why we love you. So, So not a very fast, not a big week for Mormon news. I mean, a normal week. I feel like it's a bigger week for you personally, Jeff. Tell us about
why is that?
You. All right.
My secretary in Elders Quorum is moving, and I'm very sad about it.
Boy, you're just blowing it up over there. All right. Well, that's nice.
I'm very, very sad. I'm very fond of my presidency. Sad to see the gang get broken up a little bit. He's going to Utah. New opportunities. Hey, good for them. But I'm still... I will miss him, and now I have to call a new secretary. I mean, what's that?
See,
what's the fun in that?
You're too nice to these people. I cut them off. I say, you're dead to me. Never talk to me again. You don't want to serve in a church calling with me? I never knew you.
Al, that's why my clout score is so much better than yours.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously. Okay. My clout score is amazing. I don't know. What else is going on with that? I've been working a new job, as you mentioned last week. That's been very exciting. I learned, actually, so I think since we last... or on the show. So when I interviewed with these people, my new company, after some good interviews, upstairs. They took me downstairs, showed me some of the area down there where I'd potentially
That's how you know you've made it, when they take you downstairs.
So as I was coming in the door, I saw a group of people huddled around a computer monitor, and then they all dispersed very quickly as if they got caught. And I figured, well, you know, they were like watching YouTube, and then the boss came in, and they're like, oh,
classic Dilbert.
Trying to get away from stuff. So that's all I thought of it. It's not till now that I actually learned they had Googled me and had discovered my appearance on the Mormon Bachelorette. And they were all huddled around the computer
with Aubrey?
Watching my date with Aubrey Messick. And then when they dispersed, that was because they saw me and they didn't want me to see them watching me. That's what this was all about, which I actually think is pretty funny. And then the other day, one of the women in the office made some, I did not understand the comment. She said like, hey, you like this Hatan restaurant? And I was like, sure. I have no idea what you're talking about, but sure.
It was a joke from the date.
It took me a while. I believe it was the awesome Persian restaurant where I took Aubrey Messick, the one that had bars on the windows. Apparently, she said it was the best Persian food in Los Angeles area. But I was like way lost because I was just like, what? Like, I don't understand what place you're talking about, lady. And it was that. They're like, they've all stalked me. It's creepy. So what the lesson, people, is the internet leaves a record. So be prepared.
Do not be dissuaded. Way,
no, I'm at the point where I don't really care because we have so much stuff that's public because of TWIM and all these other things that I'm just kind of like.
Yeah, we've had to sort of choose to live a public life, eh?
In a way. I mean, it's not like we're crazy prominent individuals or anything. But, you know, at some point you just say, hey, whatever I say is going to get out there and there's nothing I can do about it. So if anything, I just have to.
I'm just terrified of running for political office and my G-chats being uncovered like a Hillary Clinton scandal.
What do you think of the Hillary Clinton personal email server scandal?
I just think that's her being dumb.
Can Mormons trust her to be president?
I would say absolutely. She's on AOL, which is the most trusted personal email server out there.
Of course. Yeah,
AOL's naturally. Never been hacked. That's not true.
No. It's like, well, government, it's like we could get all up in arms about this and be like, yes, because we saw that government servers are so safe over the past couple of years.
Right, absolutely. Right.
She really should have been on Sony. She should have been on Sony's servers. That would have been better. Definitely.
All right, that's a dumb joke, Jeff. That's a dumb joke.
I'm a dumb person. That's life. So my life is great. How is your life? How is the show me state? Have you shown things lately?
Tremendous. It's 70 degrees here right now. Amazing. Absolutely
that's
amazing.
Nice. Compared to weeks past. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and just a lovely weekend. I tried to go to my home ward this week. This is my second time this year I've tried to go to my home ward. And the time with the daylight savings time and the whatnot, I'm the biggest failure. I'm the biggest failure going to my ward. I keep going. There are so many other wards that I'm a part of.
How did you not know? Didn't you like set your alarm on your phone?
Rolf Kerr once said, if you have two bishops, you have no bishop. And I feel like right now I have no bishop.
Okay, but how did you miss this? If you're basing, you're the kind of guy who looks at your phone for your time or your computer. That's how I
yes,
know you.
Go on.
You're not a watch kind of guy. And so those automatically.
No, the alarm went off appropriately, and my will to go to my home ward was diminished as I tried to wake up and said, no, thank you. I'm going to go to the one at 12:30.
Yeah, that's fair. What time is your home ward meet?
9?
Oh, that's early, yeah.
I mean, it's not as early as you, but it was early enough for me to say, you know what? No one's expecting me there. It's my off week for traveling around. I'm gonna go sit in the other one. It's sort of the luxury. I call it a perk of the High Council, maybe.
Dude, I was like hoping for some kind of clemency, knowing that we'd lose an hour of sleep and that I already get up. I get up at 6:30 on Sundays to go to meetings, which you get up earlier than I do on your on weeks. I know that, so whatever.
Yo, yeah.
But I get up at 6:30 normally. So sorry, I don't get up at 6:30. I get up at 5:30 to go to a 6:30 meeting. I'm sorry. And so knowing that I'd be getting up at 4:30, basically, I was sitting there like, maybe they'll be really nice and just not do it today. So we don't all get it. But no, we still did it. Probably because we had all of those like church closed for ice, and we had that fire.
Oh, you got to catch up. You got to catch up.
The word cancel schedule has been off for a little bit, so I imagine they and we don't do them on fast Sundays, so I imagine they wanted to get back in the saddle. But my goodness, it was a tired day. That was just
you, poor fella. And for everybody out there that had to worship Jesus for upwards of 3 hours on a day where we lose an hour, you have our condolences.
Oh,
we're there
goodness,
with
it
you.
Was so rough. I can't complain. My bishopric members have a meeting before ours, so they got up at like 3:30 equivalent, which is just nuts. Why even go to bed at that point? Just pull an all-nighter.
You just show up the next morning, toothpicks in the eyes. All right.
Oh, man. So it's fun, you know, whatever. Other than that, we are we chug along. I'm surprised you don't have any amusing anecdotes. Al, you used to be able to tell us hilarious dating stories. What has happened to you? I relied on you for hearing about the terrible first dates you would go on. I know it's different right now, but that was funny. I think you owe it to us.
No, man, I had some good ones. I had some good ones in my time. Remember
the time that you touched the woman's nose?
That was funny. Yeah, that's never a good way to say goodbye. A little index finger swipe across the nose. You think it's cute in your mind, and then you execute. Bad idea. The sitting in the front room texting who I thought was my buddy and was actually her saying, "This chick is taking forever. Is she for real?"
I forgot about that one.
Actually going to her. The time where we had set up the date, and then a different phone number that I had not saved in my phone texted to cancel dinner plans. It was my old mission buddy and not my date. And so then I thought my date had stood me up at the last minute when I was standing her up at the last minute, and gradually came to terms with that next day. I mean, I've got some great ones in my history. I feel like I've given this world a lot of humor.
Did I ever tell you about the time that there were two women I'd kind of seen, and then one night on Facebook, I saw that they'd both checked in together at a Froyo place? Like, I knew that they had met.
Like, they were friends?
I was interspersing, basically. So they clearly, like, met at Institute that night or something, and just said, oh, yeah, you know, so they went to hang out. Apparently, they'd never met before, and I saw them check in at a Froyo establishment. Or doesn't matter, it's Froyo. But I saw them.
And you were sure you were going to come up in this type of conversation?
I could guarantee I was going to. And all I was thinking, staring at my... I was like, I kid you not, I was sitting in my room looking at my computers going, no, 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 no.
You're like Shia LaBeouf in a Transformers movie.
Yeah, pretty much. I channeled him, and that's what I wanted. And as you might imagine, I did hear about it later on. When one of them says, yeah, I've been like, I date this guy, Jeff. And they're like, Openshaw? Yeah, I've been dating him. And then they look at each other and say, huh, interesting.
Let's say if you were like, I've been dating this girl, Brittany, I wouldn't be like, Brittany Bumshwamama. I would just be like, oh, cool, you're dating a Brittany too. That's cute.
So anyway, nope. Just my counsel to our listeners, especially the men, don't overlap, you know? If you think you're good with somebody, just try to focus on that one. Don't keeping all your irons in the fire.
It's not worth the drama, people. It's not worth it.
It's not, because eventually you will get burned.
Yeah. Nothing good has ever come out of like, well, I was dating three women at the same time and lying to all of them. And then I picked the one that I liked the best, and that's the one that I still like. That's never resulted in like a stable emotional commitment to somebody. I don't really.
I mean, I feel like that's a plot of a Friends episode waiting to happen, though. So it could be good for that. But I don't know.
All right.
I've yet to see it on Gilmore Girls either.
You're watching Gilmore Girls, you shameful man.
Rory has become quite a hussy. That's all. I mean, it's just so sad.
I have no idea what you say. I don't care. Know what you say.
Okay.
Let's see. So in the Mormon world this week, there's been some interesting things. One of my favorites, though, was there's one of my employees that works for me came in. It was
I didn't know
a little
you're
bit
gonna talk about this. Okay.
A little bit embarrassed, but she's like, hey, so I'm at my church this Sunday, and they were. You know, sort of promoting this campaign to go to Utah to save the Mormons. And I'm like, well, that's pretty jacked up. And she's like, well, yeah, I was a little bit embarrassed.
And you're like, you know, I'm your Mormon boss, right? Why are you bringing this to me?
No, we have a good rapport, and I'm not going to get offended at something like that. I just think that it's, you know, I'm in Missouri. That's the nature of the beast. And so I'm like, all right. And she's like, and they showed this video and you're in it. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? She said, yeah, there's this video talking about how the Mormons are, you know, are clueless and hate religion and aren't going to make it in life and need to be saved. And you're in it. And I was like, what are you talking about? So they show me the video, and at like the 43-second mark, I'm walking down the street in South Temple, like coming from my apartment to an airport or something, just cruising. And I get this great cameo in this anti-Mormon campaign. So I am what all of these people are picturing as they say, I want to go and save that man. It's me in a hoodie. That is what is driving them to give up their comforts of home and go to Utah. Yeah. I was the most despicable person they could find in Utah.
The real question, I don't know how that works as far as consent in public places. I know that's a murky area.
I don't know either, but because I'm like, I don't want to be tacitly endorsing this, but who's to say?
You should email them. Al, do your TWIM duty. Contact them and say, my likeness is in your video, and I am not okay with that, and I would love to see what their response is. This could be awesome.
At the same time, I kind of like being the face of all Mormondom for all the haters out there.
Yeah, the face of like lost people I was confused by the video, and I know you. It makes sense to you, but I felt like they described Utah as being about over 70% LDS, and then said 20-odd% of the people are godless. And they want to
98%
save them.
So of them are 98% of Utah's lost sheep.
Yeah, and so are they assuming then the 2% are what, evangelical Christians or something?
Yeah, it's Baptist. The kicker, though, this is what's interesting. As I sort of digested this, that's sort of how every church views the world. And thankfully for us, you know, I feel like in our church, we're turning this corner where it's becoming less about a competition of whose church is the rightest. We've talked about this before. More about understanding, you know, the covenants and the priesthood that goes along with administering those. And what we have in this church, and it's like, no, you know, your church can be good too. You go be Baptist. I mean, that's awesome. And then at some point in your life, I'm going to expect that you're going to want to make covenants with your Heavenly Father. And that's where you just need to know about what's going on over here and come talk to me then. But like until then, if you're crushing it with your thing, good. Keep crushing it. But
that's,
like,
it's nice to say that. And maybe we're getting that way, but I still think by and large within Mormonism, we're not that way.
I think
still very much that we are the only true and living church. And while there are great churches and people doing great things, we are the only vehicle by which one may receive all the saving ordinances of the gospel. And we hit that drum.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. Well, that is true. That is true. You know, we believe that. The delimiter there, though, that like when I was younger, there was something in me that sort of felt like in order, it was a zero sum game. In order for us to be true, everybody else had to be false.
Right, I agree. Which is not our teaching at all. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, that's the corner that I've sort of turned, is like, that's not the case. And I mean, other churches can do a lot of good, and people being a part of other churches is a good thing. You know, good. Go support, go draw closer to your Heavenly Father. Because as you do, you will continue to be led. I mean, Jesus does the drawing to himself, right? Like, what does he say in 39:27? I was lifted up on the cross, and I might draw all men unto me. He's drawing them unto them. And it's our job just not to screw it up, right? It's our job just not to get in the way of people getting a testimony and sort of inform. You know, if you can teach people about that the priesthood was restored and that you can make covenants with your Heavenly Father, and there's, you know, the things that go along with that, like if they know that, great. Like, you don't have to act on it right now. I just want to plant that seed so you know what's there, and off we go. Now, what's interesting about this the anti-Mormon campaign thing, though, is as a missionary, I was that same way. That, you know, this, everybody that's not Mormon is lost. And they, I mean, but to have that used against you, it's offensive rhetoric. That is not positive. You're not sending positive vibes when that's how you talk about others or those not of your faith. We don't do a great job of that.
I know. And it's kind of, and it is funny because, yeah, that's how I see this. Like, if I see Baptists coming to Utah to want to save us. I easily think, like, what's wrong with you guys? You know, quit hating on us. But we send missionaries all throughout the world. And sure, our methodology might be different in different circumstances, better or worse on both sides, depending on what we do. That's fine. But in that sense, I think it is kind of funny because we don't necessarily do it the exact same way, but we send people all over the world to enlighten them. And of course, you know, like they teach the missionaries to say, like, you know, we're not here to tell you you are wrong. We are not here to take away your faith. We are here to add to it. That is the classic line. But
yes,
I just But I do think it's funny that I can just as easily be affronted by something when we do the same thing.
That's kind of our jam too.
Yeah, perhaps wrapped up differently, but still the same basic idea. We're trying to save lost souls, even if we don't call them that.
Well, it's like legitimately offensive to be like, wait, what? I'm the clueless about religion that you are going. You're going to go on a mission to save me. I'm good, bro. I'm good. Anyway,
and now if only you were still in Utah, you could meet them on the street, give them a fake phone number, or give them your real phone number, and then keep setting up visits, and then keep not being home.
We got to at least screen grab that, and we'll put it up. We'll put it up for everybody to see. I feel like I have a lot of swagger there. I look very fashionable, cruising the street, Vans and a hoodie, just hanging open, walking, doing my thing. I was like, man, I was on point right there.
You're probably on your way to Hartman's for a delightful lunch. Getting ready.
it was always brunch for me. It was always brunch.
Good. Well,
so
good.
Yeah, a couple of big things this week. A couple of interesting things. Yes.
All right.
Let's see. First, Jeff wrote an article called "The Top 21 Temples."
Oh, this is
the stupidest, stupidest thing.
It is. But, why is that the case? Tell me why.
Well, it's stupid because you've stack ranked our temples. And you've used none of my own internal methodology that I would have used to rank them.
That's the beauty of it. If you read it, it says, here is the definitive, completely subjective list. I recognize that there is no
why not a top 10 list like a normal human being?
Because the list got too long. I tried 10. And just so
second,
many,
you got to
so
20,
many.
And then you had to do 21?
Yeah.
And the one that pushed the envelope to draw us to the 21st was Preston, England. What? Why? Why Preston, England?
Did you read why?
Also, you have temples on here. The Provo Temple, not even done.
Uh-huh.
Also, this is a multi-page blog, like we're some sort of crummy BuzzFeed. The temples, and you picked very lovely pictures, Jeff. Good job. And you've reasoned your way through it very well. I'm upset that Nauvoo isn't number one. I don't feel like Manti's earned that spot in the least, outside of being
Have you been to Manti?
Yeah, I have. I have. It's lovely.
Have you, though?
I have. Salt Lake as number two. I like that the picture that you got of it was before downtown was developed. I didn't know that was even an available picture.
Oh, yeah. For like the sake of fair use, all of these pictures actually come from like church newsroom stuff. So these are, I doctored them up a little bit and made them more dramatic, but they're all the same ones.
I increased the saturation.
I messed around with some settings in Google Photos, yeah, which is basically just Snapseed online. But that's a good point, actually. I didn't realize that about I didn't even think about nothing being behind it. Now, I wonder if that means they took it after they bulldozed. I don't know, because I think some of those buildings would still be there. They might have.
I bet this is from 1893. Same
really?
Picture.
Are you serious?
And then, yeah. Anyway.
It can't be. It has the temples, annex. I see
if
this.
If you love temples, and some of you do, all of you should. It's an all right post. It's good. It's good. Good
an all right post. Al, there's okay, maybe Preston's debatable. I even said to a commenter on Facebook, you could swap out Preston for another one that they mentioned. I said, swap out Preston for Mesa if you want. That's fine. I gave you La Ie. You should be happy about it.
Mesa is in the middle of, like, the hood. Mesa would be an awful temple to put in there because you have to use the club when you park at the Mesa Temple.
Yes, you do. But you have to think more about what they like, the other meaning behind them. Like the Mesa Temple was the first temple where Spanish language sessions were ever held, for example. That's significant. They have a pageant. They have other things. So there's significance to the Mesa Temple.
They have a pageant. That's
well, even like Monticello you ripped on, but I chose Monticello because it was the first mini temple.
That's yeah, but it was such a tiny temple, and it's out by Moab. There's nothing there.
I know, but the Monticello Temple was the basis by which all of these other mini temples were built to go around the world to bring the temples.
Which
to
we
the
don't
people.
Love the mini temples. We wish they were all bigger.
We do. We do, but it's still great that we get temples in places. And I could have also instead used Colonia Juarez because that was sort of how President Hinckley got the inspiration.
I've been in chapels that are bigger than some of these temples.
I know. They're tiny, but isn't it better that the saints out in the Memphis area now have a temple in their vicinity and don't have to drive up to St. Louis or to Atlanta or to Houston? I mean, you know, they have – or to
– You know, at
there's
this
a
point,
temple
Jeff,
in Memphis. There's a temple
I don't know. I don't know.
There's
you
a
know,
temple in
I
Baton
used,
Rouge.
I used to think I knew. Now I don't know. Maybe it would have been better to drive a little
yeah,
further and
think
get
about
a little
it.
Bigger
There's
temple.
There's a temple in Columbia, South Carolina. There's a temple in Raleigh. All these places had no temples, and they all follow that template to be done.
Because they didn't deserve it. They didn't earn the full-size temple. I still don't count them as actually having one.
Okay. You know, the Keefe Temple's not actually that huge either. You know that,
it's
right?
It's big enough to not be a mini. All right? I'm going to leave it at that, and we're going to move on, Jeff.
And you should like what I wrote about the Keefe Temple, the way I let it off.
What'd you say?
Among the many things Ukraine possesses that Russia does not, including some modicum of rule of law, civil society, and democracy, it also boasts the only temple in the entire former Soviet Union. So there we go.
Yes.
My bias rings true. I can't help it in that case. Well, anyways, folks, if you like that, it's on our website. Go check it out. I don't expect everyone to agree. That's the point. You know, go for it.
Give us your top three. And exclude the cop-outs.
In other sort of semi-interesting news, so this thing's going down. There's sort of a legal fight going on between the church, literally, because it's actually via the corporation of the presiding bishop, so not the president of the church, but the presiding bishopric, and basically a consortium of water rights folks in Nevada.
So and the corporation of the presiding bishop is the business arm of the church, yeah?
Not entirely. It's more the, well... I don't know it if you is. Want to see the business arm. It's the holding arm for things that are of temporal welfare to the saints.
Yeah.
Bishop's Storehouse, the various ranches, orchards, all those things. Because the corporate arm
City,
is the
City
corporation.
City Creek
of
was developed under the eye of the presiding bishop.
No. City Creek was developed under the corporation of the president of the church via Deseret Holdings. That's what I'm saying. I believe these are separate entities.
Are you quite certain? Because I feel quite certain the other way, Jeff.
Yeah, because presiding bishop is all about temporal, like, just day-to-day welfare of the church. So presiding bishopric manages meeting houses, just from a building management perspective. And then they oversee all of, they oversee Welfare Square, all the welfare efforts, and all of the other things that we do to plan for the apocalypse in the church. As far as owning 2% of Florida, that's presiding bishopric, that kind of stuff. So,
okay,
there we go. Anywho, so we have a ranch way out in the boonies outside of Las Vegas, a ways out there. We have a big cattle ranch out there. We raise cattle, then we send them up to Idaho, slaughter them, make them into meat, give it to the people. We've been doing it for years. We'd like to keep doing it, but thirsty Las Vegas folks want to instead divert the aquifer that feeds this area and run it to Vegas so that they have water for people, casinos especially. And I know, for example, this group is even, there's five major casinos, which you got like the Wynn and the Bellagio that are all grouped together in this cause to try to get more water to Las Vegas.
Las Vegas is drying up. It's going away.
Well, and they've had bad droughts out west. Even Lake Mead, for example, if you go there right now, you know how lakes, especially out west, you know when the lake goes down.
I'm sorry,
the
lake in the middle of the desert is drying up? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah. Yes, because Lake Mead was... built by damming the Colorado River, Hoover Dam, you know. But the point is, if you see those sort of calcite lines, the lake's about 100 feet lower than it usually is. So the droughts have been very bad out west, so water's a serious concern right now. It always is out west, but even more so than it has been in the past. And so this is the serious legal fight where the church is trying to preserve its right, as well as some Indian tribes, preserve their right to their water supply. And then it's a question of, or do the needs of the many, meaning civilization down in the Las Vegas area, will override that and take the water away and pretty much ruin the church's ranch, but allow Mandalay Bay to keep its aquarium going.
That is a little crazy, actually. that like you could buy land because of the rights, because of everything that's there, and then have them just kiped right out from under you. Well, so I mean, on one side, it's weird to see the church sort of in a legal battle suing a city and going up after it. On the other hand, glad that they're standing up for themselves and good. Anything to raise cattle in the deserts of Las Vegas, I support.
Yeah, aren't there better places where they could be raising cattle? I mean, what are those cattle eating? They can't be free range. There's nothing to eat on the ground.
Well, no, you get the cheap breakfast buffet. I mean, it's literally like $5 or $6 and you could all you can eat. That's the way to do it.
I would actually like to find out about the church runs. Like if are they
I want to see this
corn?
DVD they showed. Yeah.
I do like that the church didn't comment, but the lawyer gave them a DVD about the ranch. Where is this? Another email for you to send, Al. Please request information.
I'm like, can I have that DVD, please, people?
I would love to see how we raise cattle. Like, if we do it ethically or not, or if we're just stuffing them full of corn and food that they don't actually naturally eat.
I'm sure it's free range and completely ethical.
And totally organic and no antibiotics.
Another big one, Jeffrey R. Holland was giving an interview this week to Charlie Chaplin. That's not true. What was his name?
It says in the article.
Arvydas Sabonis. No, Cam Kachucka. Hold on. He's clearly talking to Hugh Hewitt. Conservative radio host Hugh Hewitt. I was close on two of those. But in there, they were talking about, he projected that the church would have 100,000 missionaries by 2019. So that's in 4 years. Right now, obviously, when they had the surge, it went from 58,000 to almost 90,000. They expected to settle around 75,000. And it actually is holding steady right around 85,000, which is interesting that, I mean, what's crazy about that on one hand is such a huge jump. And I wonder how many of these are represented by sisters, but even with elders, like how many more go just because it's convenient? It's right out of high school. I wonder if we get a huge jump out of that. Do you think, Jeff?
Yeah. I don't know. It's crazy to me to think of it actually going up that high that
like
quickly.
There's a discrepancy of like 30,000 people that would have been going if the ages were always lower. It just seems crazy to me.
Potentially. I mean, if you take where we're at now and get to that number, that's, you know, if we even take it down to 80, if there's 80 right now, that's a 25% increase over the next 4 years. I mean, the church doesn't grow at 25% over 4 years. The church grows at about 2-odd% per year as far as convert baptisms go. So,
no.
And the other question is,
it grows at more than 2%.
No, not really. 2-3%.
What is that? So right now we have, let's say we have, what do we have, 14 million people?
We have
roughly
15 million members of the church now.
With roughly a 500,000 baptisms, 300,000 convert baptisms, 300,000 baptisms of children.
We haven't cracked 300,000 in a while, but okay.
So I mean, well, that's what I'm saying. Let's go 500,000, a 500,000 between the two. That's more than 2%.
So you want to round all the way up to 500,000? That's a significant rounding error.
I'm rounding down. I'm 300 children of age, 300,000 children of age, and 300,000.
We don't include them. They don't matter, the children of age.
That's absolute growth, Jeff. That is growth. Boom.
They don't.
Lawyer.
I think I've got the stats here somewhere. Either way, it seems like a pretty crazy amount. And he doesn't really explain it, Elder Holland, very much after these comments, why he feels that way. But they just think that, yep, the future is going to have a whole bunch
What's great about it, though, is it's sort of the generation coming up, some baby boomers of just a few years ago, because the church doesn't necessarily have to grow by that much. The demographic has to grow by that much. We have to be able to support.
It's true.
We have to have 100,000 people ready to rock, which maybe with increased, honestly, like an increase in seminary teaching and Sunday school could make that change very easily, right? A delta of 20,000. Of 20,000 missionaries, that's easy to get even with just basic teaching. I'm looking at, in our stake we have, we were talking about some of the prospective elders that are on missions, and it's above like 50%. I mean, it's like 70% of prospective elders have not served a mission. And just in like me thinking about it, it's like, well, how many of those guys actually have a testimony and would be relatively low hanging fruit to go after? And I'm like, I'd probably wager about half. Right? That's about half of them that you can go get if somebody just was taking the time or going in and giving them some of the attention or care that you need at that age as you go through those transitions. Like, that could change it that much very easily, especially maybe in a church of 15 million.
Or maybe there's like just 10,000 Brazilians who are all turning 18 next year.
They're going to make a movie about it later. It's sort of the cool runnings of the Mormon world.
It's going like, to be called The Manaus Miracle.
Or the, Moroni High.
Or the cool runnings of Mormonism. And how is that? Please continue with the cool runnings analogy.
I just wanted a John Candy that was leading a group. Was that John Goodman?
No, that was John Candy.
I always get the two fat Johns. I don't know which one's which. One of them's dead. One of them's alive. I don't know. But it was kind of cool. I mean, it's cool, one, to you don't get a prediction out of an apostle very often. Which is kind of odd because that's sort of what they're supposed to be doing.
Well, that's the thing. Like, is this a prediction? Is this a prophecy? That's the question. Is he speaking as apostles speaking with prophecy?
Hugh Hewitt as a way of divining the Lord. You know, you ever notice that where he's just like, he could be a water witcher.
Yeah, I listen to Hugh Hewitt all the time. I totally know who he is.
I love that I'm surprised to see a prophecy from the prophets. That's weird.
I've never even heard of Hugh Hewitt. Like, who is he? Local? Is he Utah? No, I don't even know who this man is.
No, Jeff. He's got him and his friend Jackson have that great tax place, Jackson Hewitt. They do taxes.
Oh, okay, okay.
That's the one.
Okay, I see.
Anywho,
there's that rival show
there.
by the blocks.
Bible by the Bible from the block.
Other news that here we go again. So. Last week we talked about Kate Kelly losing her appeal to be reinstated in the church after her excommunication. And now John DeLynn, after many times publicly stating he would not seek to be reinstated or to have his excommunication overturned, has now decided to do a bit of an about-face, and he will now appeal his excommunication from the church.
Which is great. Which is great that the desire to be a part of the church is there. Good. Good.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully. I mean, we don't know any of the circumstances or whatever, but hey, he doesn't just want to walk away and he wants to be involved somehow. Hopefully it's for positive reasons and not just, you know, random misguided stuff. I don't know.
The appeal is more, I feel like he's more appealing the process that was taken.
It is. It's almost like he's saying, basically, I had a mistrial, so you have to just nullify the results.
Yeah, which is an interesting angle. I mean, it's weird through some of that stuff because in the end it's, you know, like the process as defined 150 years ago, is a little bit more streamlined today. I mean, there's the motions of, you know, one of the things he talks about is he didn't feel like anybody spoke in his behalf, which in the high council, you're supposed to have representatives to speak in your behalf and those to speak in behalf of the church. And just to make sure that everything's well represented. And I mean, so not having that or feeling like that wasn't there, you could feel a little bit slighted in that. I'm curious how long these sort of disciplinary councils get to go with. Hold on, let me rephrase this. I'm curious if the church will ever give more defined guidelines to some of this, because right now, as it stands, they just say follow the spirit, which is great. But hard because you don't get consistency across cases like this, especially higher profile ones, where the internet sort of magnifies everything. I wonder if there's more instruction given. You think?
I think there will be some. Elder Oakes sort of hinted at that when we had the press conference back in January, all about religious freedom and, you know, voting, all that stuff. Because in some of their Q&As afterwards, they as much as said that, yeah, they didn't want to get into specifics because of what was going on with John DeLynn, but kind of that they thought that some extra guidance from Salt Lake would prove useful. So I don't know if that means they'll standardize a few more things to so that we don't have too much of, because I can understand people feeling like it's a crapshoot, you know, because you could have a very, I don't want to say open-minded, that means that other ones aren't. But yeah, sure, you could have a very open and understanding stake president or bishop who might not love what's going on or the choices you're making or the podcast and nonprofit you run. But they might also say, you know, we respect your right to a voice and whatever else, and we're not going to do anything about it.
But
and
I then will you defend could be the exact... with my life your right to podcast.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, but you never know. Then you could have ones that just don't care and want to come down on you. So it's a little inconsistent in that sense. Minor things I think that he could do better, though. He addresses the letter to LDS Church First Presidency. Now, if you are going to write a letter to the brethren, I think the worst thing you can do is lead off using one of the shorthand terms that the church consistently and dissuades people from using, at least as a first mention. Like
that's your takeaway?
Look, it's minor, but if I'm reading this, the first thing says LDS Church First Presidency. Like, if you're serious,
there's no one in the First Presidency that read that and thought, "How dare he abbreviate?"
I think you'd be surprised, because considering the Elder Ballard comes to mind, who's spoken many times on the fact that when you cite the name of the church, call it the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. The style guide for the church says the same thing, at least as the first instance.
The angels in heaven recording your testimony, I promise you, do not care.
I don't think it's that big of a deal, but I feel like if you're trying to show
when you're dealing
to the
with eternal salvation, as you are in a disciplinary council or the appeal thereof, I promise you it does not matter.
Okay, I'm sure it doesn't, but I'm just saying, if you want stuff to be in your favor, be the smart one, because it's John DeLynn. You know about these very minor things, but use the church's full name
you
to show that you respect the institution
a nerd.
As the institution wishes to
Jeff,
be respected.
I love you for the fact that you noticed that, but no, absolutely not.
Also, why would you include a letter of support written by Kate Kelly to try and state your case? Now, I'm not knocking Kate Kelly, but she's kind of a persona non grata, and it's like, if you want to have a persuasive letter from someone that's going to make people rethink it, have a letter from D. Todd Christofferson that says we should, Or someone else. I don't think that the recently excommunicated ordained women founder is the person who's going to tug at the heartstrings of the powers that be. Also a
now,
minor
now
thing,
that's fair,
but
sure.
Why?
Okay.
I mean, well, like, that's just not going to do any good. If anything, it says, so he's in league with Kate Kelly. Why are we listening to him again? You know, it's just...
Now, moving along, because I just don't care to talk about this too much. Moving along, there's this is one of the themes, though, that we're sort of at risk of, and I know some people have expressed curiosity at it in the past, is that a lot of the news that's out there right now is news that's sort of, I don't know if I'd say, like, against the church, but, like, critical of the church in a lot of ways, and we try really hard to, like, bring it in a positive way, but there's a lot of stuff out there. In fact, there's some that, like, rehash the stuff that we talked about before that came back out this week that we're like, we're not going to give airtime to, but be conscious that there's just a lot of this stuff out there. And so the fact that we talk about it week after week is us trying to be true to our mission of bringing it up and giving you sort of the central place to go to for more manity. But at the same time, we're trying hard to represent both our faith and our beliefs in a positive way. So one of the other ones, disclaimer.
Good.
That's more John DeLynn than this, but yeah.
No, I mean, I feel you. We're not pushing those views, but I think it's stuff. I don't think any Mormon should be afraid to know about the whole John DeLynn thing. We do ourselves a disservice by shutting ourselves off completely. You know,
absolutely. Which in fact, there was even an article this week in the Salt Lake Trib about teaching the members of sort of the messier parts or the unknown parts of church history, and how that there needs to be a push from a teaching standpoint that addresses a lot of that, right? Like that addresses the fact that everything may not be exactly how we've distilled it down. It's not that what we've taught or what we've been taught is not true. It's that we, you know, you get the call to serve video. When you put together the pamphlet of things that you must know about, you know, the First Vision or translating the Book of Mormon, you're going to skip over the parts that that maybe aren't relevant or aren't necessarily adding to the story, right?
Sure.
And not to say that the parts that are being left out are, like, I mean, there's nothing in me that feels at all sort of led by the church. It's just, you tell the story with the best spin that you can possibly put on it. And as, you know, if we tell people that there's nothing else to know, we're doing them a disservice. We need to tell them that, all right, church history, every event in church history, there's more than what fits in the pamphlet. So go look at it. Go read about it. It's on the church website. It's in church manuals. You can go read about it in like historical documents or historical accounts, things like that. That's all there for you to read. Particularly, you know, stuff like what the church has been doing with the essays recently of trying to help people be more at ease with the fact that there is a full on history of the church out there that you should be going and learning about. And if you can do that in a positive way, if you can sort of open that up, you're never gonna feel slighted. Or once you realize that everything, you know, that everything isn't as rosy as it always was told to you, you know, the idea is that you sort of understand that men are men, and this is a religion that's being restored, and it was not, you know, the church has not been perfect in its history. Neither have the men in the church been perfect in its history. The gospel and the doctrines, as they've been restored, I believe are perfect. And as we understand them more and more, it leads us back to being like a complete church. But has not always been the case, you know,
yeah.
Jeff.
And I think you've said plenty of good stuff there. What I know the story you're referencing about the teaching of stuff. And I think what's good is at first when a lot of those essays came out, they were just buried. They were released, and we were made aware of them through various channels, but it wasn't publicized. And now
nobody over the pulpit read them, right?
No, but now I've seen letter. We've had a letter read over the pulpit that said, "Hey, there's these essays online. You should go read them," and that's good. I think before it was kind of like the excuse to say, "Well, you can't say the information's not out there because it is. It's out there. We have it right there." But it's okay to draw some attention to it. Help us work through it. And I think that's good. Yeah, and we're working on it. So I know you were also getting into a different story before we kind of got sidetracked there. I'm sorry.
No, that's right. That's Alan. Right. Yeah, well, the other story that I was going to talk about was the there's a guy, Kirk Von Allen, who wrote a piece over on Patheos. It's sort of a critique of Section 132. This stuff is always kind of interesting to me. I remember when we talked a while ago about a guy who suggested that maybe Nephi wasn't supposed to kill Laban, you know, that's sort of how it's been reported in all these years, but his understanding led him to feel maybe differently. What's interesting about that is it's like a widely held understanding of that's how it always went, and because it tells a nice story and sort of works into a talk well, but there's nothing. We weren't there. We don't know.
I think it wasn't that Nephi wasn't supposed to kill Laban, but it was more about maybe like that Nephi is, when Nephi has his lament later in the scriptures, that some of that was reflecting upon the years of guilt he had for killing Laban.
Sure, yeah.
I think that's what this person said.
Well, it's sort of a critique of that story. And so here, this Kirk Von Allen fella, he did a similar, well, maybe similar in some ways, critique of Section 132. He argues that, and that's the section on polygamy, and
eternal marriage.
Yeah, and he goes back through some Bible sections anywhere where he can get his hands on polygamy, and he's like, yeah, you know, the argument that this is from God is pretty weak in all these cases, and the verbiage that they use to say that it's from God, he's like, I'm of the persuasion that polygamy was never ordained of God, that it was never like that, you know, the principles of the eternal marriage were revealed and then misunderstood, and that this was never supposed to happen, which again, I mean, this sort of falls. Well, and saying that, Jeff, do you have, I mean, you have anything to add there or like before I'm.
Well, that's sort of the gist of it. I mean, he goes into Galatians 5, you know, that, you know, but the fruits of the Spirit And of course, the you know, against these things, there is no law. He basically says that, you know, within Mormondom, apparently there is a law that does not mesh with the fruits of the Spirit. And it's an interesting analysis in his view of why he believes polygamy could not be actually divinely mandated. You know, he goes in the scriptures, you think about polygamy in the scriptures, like Abraham or whatever, and he says there was no evidence of God saying you must be a polygamist. It was merely that people were polygamists at the time, culturally, and God just sort of rolled with it. Like, that's all was going on. And that's whatever. I mean, I don't care if that's an interpretation. Okay, maybe that's fine. And so he says that there's no legit explanation for having polygamy other than, especially, and there's one section that I think that is at least a little bit persuasive, because he says, if we're restoring ancient biblical things, why do we not restore things like blood atonement and all these other ancient things that we did back in the day that we got rid of? Like, why do we restore polygamy, which was clearly some sort of, if it was anything, a Mosaic law sort of thing, but we don't restore other things? That was one of the fair, at least, things to bring up.
Now,
I think in some places
where
he misses it, though.
Yeah, this is where I think this is a better example of sort of the root of this discussion than anything John DeLynn or Kate Kelly has done, right? Where this is more of like a, here are my thoughts, here's sort of how I understand this, and you know, here it is. This is what I'm thinking, and it doesn't necessarily go against. I don't feel like if I didn't believe in polygamy that my testimony would be at risk or anything of that nature. But so here he says this in his stake president, supposedly, and we don't have this from him, we have this secondhand, but his stake president called him in to discuss this and essentially question, or wanted him to sort of take this off of his blog and take away anything that might criticize the position that polygamy was inspired. And so, I mean, that's what, this is one of those. One, I think the argument is fascinating, to sort of read through and try and understand, especially for somebody that struggles with the idea of polygamy in its own right, which I know plenty of members do, you know, and plenty of members did back then. It hasn't ever been anything that sat super easy with people. And so we shouldn't be afraid of thinking through it or digesting it or maybe even disagreeing with it. There's nothing in our church that says you have to agree with everything that the church teaches. You are welcome to question and gain a testimony of them one at a time and have your testimony of half the doctrines and then half later. That's okay. But here we are. I mean, I interpret this as sort of a stake presence, again, well-intentioned, sort of trying
allegedly
to address
a
bigger need maybe, and then... But in the end, it's sort of stifling. It is stifling some of the free thought that in my stake or in my area, my sphere of influence, I enjoy a great deal of. Like, I don't think there's anybody in my circle that I interact with regularly that would have a problem with me writing a blog post similar to this, or saying, yeah, I don't know, I see it differently.
That's true, and it's interesting because he closes saying, you know, that basically, when I look honestly at Doctrine and Covenants 132 and the fruits of such words, I do not see God but the works of men. That's his whole argument, that it was just the creation of man. I guess he's entitled to that, and I don't see this guy as someone who carries the weight of a John DeLynn. I don't see him rallying a cause to get the church to, like, publicly disavow, because we've never completely disavowed polygamy. You know, all we've ever said is that we got rid of it with the manifestos and that we don't do it anymore, but there's nothing where
wonder-
the church has said polygamy was wrong and we regret it.
Does a blog post count as proselytizing your view?
I think that's some of the question that we've all had for the past year or so, right? Like, where's the line?
Podcast with a big audience, yes. A podcast with very small audience, maybe no. I mean,
a blog post with one post. He doesn't even have like other stuff on there. Like, this is the only thing he's written, as far as I can tell.
Yeah. I don't know. On the positive side, be thinking, understand doctrines, challenge them, discern them, pray about them. Like, these are our privileges as members of the church. On the other hand, how do you do that? And make sure that everybody's sort of satisfied. At some point, somebody's going to be frustrated with it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I think there's one good thing you can do is, I think this is worth a read. It's pretty long, But I think it's okay to read and try to understand one's perspective, because as you read it, you might recognize portions. I did as I read it, where I said, I don't really think that's what that scripture is actually saying. Or you're maybe ignoring this other stuff that leads up to a couple of verses that provide some context. And that's good, because that ideally helps us to actually study the scriptures more and understand everything. So I would say read this, and then also read Fair Mormon published a response to it. And I think, like anything else, you're basically taking the two different sides of an issue. Read them both and then help inform your view on.
So yeah, both with like an L.
Yeah, because I think so many people will read just the post by Mr. Van Allen and say, yeah, polygamy's messed up. And others might read just the Fair Mormon post and be like, how dare they question anything, right? Read both and come to conclusions and think about the stuff. Because the Fair Mormon post brings up some very good points, namely that he almost completely skips the first half of Section 132. And he kind of misses the point of 132, because Joseph Smith was asking about why he saw many wives in the Bible. And the response was the revelation on eternal marriage. And later there were comments about polygamy, but
they can
be misunderstood if you don't study it all correctly. And so I think that's something to remember in reading these remarks, and where he misses the mark a little bit.
I'm genuinely curious, though, because this kind of interaction between leaders and members of the church is going to continue to sort of agitate, right? We're going to see more of this as people continue to, like, our thinking isn't in journals anymore. It's on a blog, or it's in a Tumblr, or on Facebook, or something of that nature. And I mean, at some point, I don't know. Like, I would love a clear understanding of what the expectation was, or what we're allowed. I mean, not what we're allowed to think, but like almost, yeah. Like what are the guidelines wherein we're safe from any of these sort of conversations? I don't know.
I think the church has always been kind of hands off in that sense, because like anything else, they say like,
well, I think the greater church is, it's the local, these local level leaders that are trying to sort of sniff it out, and instead of being helpful and testimony building, they're being hurtful.
And they might be. So good. What I think will happen is perhaps more guidance from Salt Lake. I don't know if we'll receive much as a body of saints, where they'll say, here are the lines and this and this and this, because I don't think God wants that for us. I mean, a big part of discipleship is learning what God wants for us and learning his law, and then, you know, working with that knowledge to find our way through stuff and not feel like we have to have every little thing dictated to us and say, this is what you can do, this is what you can't do, end of story. But as far as the discipline angle and how to approach stuff, I think that will change a lot. I think the church is a little bit playing catch up now in the social media and digital era on how to cope with that and the things that have come up. And that's why the past 2.5 years or so, we've seen a lot of things surface, and it's going to be a while until it settles down.
Sure.
We just have to stick it out and keep helping other people feel the love while we do it.
Hi.
All right. I'm good. Let's
so also, we found an ancient lost city. I think this is maybe the city of Moronihá in Honduras.
Yep. That's where it is.
Probably.
The Tegucigalpa temple is built upon its ruins.
And Jeff, there is an actor from Meet the Mormons, which I know, was that an actor or are they just real people?
Yeah, I know this whole article cracks me up, because I'm like, he's not really an actor, but thank you.
And I think it's Brian Gumbel. Actually, I think it's one of the missionaries that taught the guy at the end, the last guy.
Yeah, it was one of the missionaries.
And it launched him into a football career at BYU. I don't know that any BYU coach was watching Meet the Mormons and said, that's my guy. But according to the Examiner, yes, that's exactly what happened.
The other problem I have here is they describe Meet the Mormons as the hit film. And
Jeff, it was a hit film for over one weekend.
I can't take a movie seriously I can't take it seriously when the article calls it a hit. It's true, though. One weekend. It was a hit film for one weekend.
It was a hit.
It made it to the top 10, sort of.
It was a midnight smash.
And then it set records for percentage tumble in the second weekend. So congratulations. Meet the Mormons. I'm going to buy it. By the way, how's your Lego book, Al? Are you enjoying it? The church history?
Oh, yeah, I did. I got the Lego book. It's great. It's a little Lego book. I haven't read any of the words. I hope the
words
are accurate.
Is it a picture? Is it pictures or is it more like church history accompanied by Lego pictures? Or is it just
pictures? It's like a majority is pictures and then less pictures. No, like it's almost all pictures, but there's words in it too, which I wasn't expecting a book with words. I'm not prepared for this.
Ugh, words are the worst.
I know. Oh my goodness. Anyway,
okay,
Jeff.
Cool.
You know where you can find us. Contact at This Week in Mormons, thisweekinmormons.com. We're waiting for you just like at the beginning of the show.
Yep. And still waiting for you on social media. And please subscribe in iTunes or Stitcher or whatever and leave us a review on there to help raise our prominence. It'll be wonderful. That's
you don't have
great.
To do anything you're not comfortable with.
No, but we encourage. That's all. We encourage. Just great.
All right. Well,
all right.
Jeff, you've been
see
delightful.
See you, dude.
Have a good week, buddy.
You have too. All right. See ya. Thanks for listening to TWIM, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. Be well.
P-I-Z-Z-A. I want pizza. Hey, are you ready to play?
Now set down the pizza and bring some chicken. Throw it on top and make your finger lick it. Guacamole, meatball,
whipped cream pouring like waterfalls.
Here's a little sauce to make it hot. Here's a lot of ice cream to hit the spot.
Toss the fish, let it fly.
Fly, fly.
Pizza pie.
Pizza.
P-I-C-C-A. Give me pizza. Watch it rise like a souffle.
Give me pizza.
P-I-C-C-A. I want pizza. You think we should stop? No way. Get your motor running, 'cause